and I am recording. This is Katie Harth with Mission Network News, and today I've got my friend Jeff Palmer on the line. He's the Executive Director of Baptist Global Response, and we're going to be talking about a couple of different places where they have ministry. We're going to start in Nepal, where they set up thousands of temporary shelters in 2015, and now I understand your partners are looking to establish permanent homes. Can you fill me in on some of those details?
Absolutely, Katie, and thanks for having us. When the earthquake hit last year in Nepal, actually there were two in April and May, it really hit at a time that not only crippled folks in terms of housing, because you would go into several communities and they had lost 100% of their homes. You know, a village of 100 people, all 100 homes were destroyed. The problem was that was the beginning of rainy season, and traditionally they don't build their homes during rainy season because they build out of mud and local rocks and bricks and things like that. And plus, they had to get on with life and they had to plant their crops because most of the people in the outlying areas are agrarian, and so they're subsistence farmers and they had to eat. So last year, we actually threw up a lot of temporary shelters working with the governments and the local governments and local believers. We put in several thousand of these temporary kind of tin Quonset hut type shelters, and they worked very well, but we knew they were temporary. But they got people through the rain. So you got a roof over their head, you know, during the rainy season. And then we came back toward the end of this year after cropping and it started cooling off. And it was colder and drier, which is their traditional time to build their homes. And so in December, we launched a rebuild project for more permanent homes. The neat part about it is that we've already worked with several communities, several thousand communities and families, several communities and several thousand families, and we've identified priority places that homes need to be rebuilt. So we have a relationship established through the previous program. So now we've relaunched our Nepal Rebuild Project, where we're going back and putting in more permanent homes. And we're targeting about 4 to 5 communities and about 450 to 500 homes.
And how is this being done in light of the, you know, because it wasn't just earthquake disaster recovery that Nepal had to deal with. There was also the big brouhaha with India over the Constitution.
Yeah.
How are you guys able to carry forth with this other thing going on?
Well, it's still tough. I mean, you know, Nepalese will tell you that they've had several disasters, the earthquake and then the embargoes against them. And it's been hard. Even right now during winter, it's hard finding heating, oil, gas for their stoves and cooking and things like that. Fuel for vehicles, which has affected us in many organizations and government from getting materials from Kathmandu up into these hardest hit areas. So that problem is not solved yet. That's a problem that's bigger than, you know, what we can do as BGR. So we're concentrating on getting folks back into their homes and trying our best to work around the inconveniences that are brought about by this. But people are suffering, Katie, and you're wise to bring this up in the conversation. They're suffering because, you know, food shortages, mainly the heating and the cooking fuel and the transportation shortages are really hitting folks. But so far, we've been able to start a few of the homes. Like I said, we're slated in the next couple of months before the rains start again, maybe to get about 450, maybe up to 500 folks back into homes.
And it'll be a continued matter of prayer because we know God's the only one who can move those mountains, so to say. And with that in mind, I'm assuming it can be really easy to focus just on meeting those physical needs because they are so many. But could you explain how your partners work the gospel into everything that they do?
Well, I mean, good point. There's a huge amount of physical needs to meet, and we want to do well in that, and we will do well in that by the grace of God. But at the same time, one of the neat things is, you know, we're working through local believers and partners that are there who have a heart for helping people, but also helping people hear the truth of the gospel. And so how does the gospel go forth? It goes forth from the people that are actually working their own ground day to day, hand in and hand together with the people and rebuilding their lives and their homes. And all along the way, Katie, sharing the truth of the gospel as they go. Many of these areas have been fairly resistant through the years, and because of a tragedy, which is sad, but yet it's an opportunity. It's opened up area, opened up relationships for us to work with communities, and people have been very, very responsive, not just to receive the help that we can give, the physical help, but also to hear the stories and the truths that we have to share in Christ.
And how can our listeners get involved and help you guys do more in Nepal?
Well, we would appreciate prayer for our folks that are working, feel prayer for them to be wise and working with government officials and local folks to choose the areas to work, prayer for them to be bold, as you brought up, to share their faith as they go about, you know, helping folks in their need, but helping them with their eternal needs as well. Also, they could partner with us in giving through our website at gobgr.org. It cost, the temporary shelters were fairly inexpensive. They were about $100 to $150 to build. And we're able to use some of those materials in the more permanent shelters. And we're looking at probably $1,500 to $1,600. And with local labor, the local families are going to get involved in that. And we're going to use local materials that are there and local labor and community involvement as well. But we still could use some help in terms of funding homes for those priority 450 to 500 families that we've identified.
And we'll get our listeners connected with the next steps that they need to take. Switching gears, I would like to ask you about your work in a restricted access nation. Now, this is a country that's very hostile to the gospel, but I understand that you guys have found a more creative way to reach people for Christ.
Well, yes. And there are several examples of what you're saying about, you know, getting into certain areas of the world. Some of them provide a little more challenges than others. We would call them creative access. We have to be creative of how to be in an area and get good contact, good relationship with people and with communities in certain areas of the world. Some areas of the world is fairly easy, and some it's a little bit harder. And in one restricted access area, or creative access area that we're talking about, we found an opening of the government and of local officials to work with prisoners in prison ministry. And these are not just ordinary prisoners. They're women prisoners who in this country, because of government structures, social structures, they actually take their children with them to prison, and they may be in there several years. Now, the kids are innocent. They haven't done anything. In many cases, there hadn't been a lot done by the woman, but she has to come in by virtue of being a mother. The kids come with them. And we could receive an open door in a couple of places in the world, but hard to get to. They give us access to help folks because, again, maybe there's not resources by the government to care for. So we're able to work with nutrition programs and education programs for the mothers, skills training, and for the kids who are there who are cut off from school. And other things, basic life support and things like that we can actually work with them and have access to them. And if they were in their regular communities, we might not, because of the restrictive access of the country that we're working in, and yet having open access because they're prisoners.
And why? What are some of the primary reasons that these women are thrown into prison?
That's a good question. I'll be careful on this. Some of it, there are some things that they've done that, you know, are against the laws of the land, that they basically are being put into prison. Many of them, there's some cultural reasons why, and I'll be very careful how to say that they're there, that they're not really what we would call from the West criminals, but culturally they've made some mistakes, and so they've been in prison. And you know, we do know from Matthew chapter 25 that there is this scene of the judgment of the lamb and the sheep, and the sheep and the goat, sorry. And one of those is, you know, I was in prison and you didn't visit me. And what we have found through a prison ministry like this, in the midst of a fairly resistant culture and people group, those who have been cut off and those who have been rejected by that group, or those that, like the women that are put in prison and their children, we have found them to be very responsive to any help that we can give them, and very responsive to the hope and the truth that's in the gospel.
And what, and as you mentioned previously, BGR teams up with local believers to do ministries like this. What made your partners in this restricted access nation want to start this type of ministry?
Well, I think part of it was they looked for several years of how to get contact with, quality contact with people, and it's very difficult. And then this opened up as an opportunity, basically through a local government who said, we have this need that nobody's caring really for these women and these children. That was one of the issues, the children that are actually in the prison that, you know, that by no fault of their own, just the fact their mother is there. And so we were actually there trying to work with, in this particular case, trying to work with some projects that would give us access to people in this restricted area. And actually, the government opened up the doors for us to do this. So it's kind of neat being present, you know, kind of going out and trying to find out where God's at work and joining him in that work. And I would say in this case, that's kind of what happened with our team.
And, you know, sometimes with stories like this, where it's a restricted access nation and we're not naming names or locations in order to protect everyone involved, but on the listener's end, they might think, well, why should I care? I don't even know where this place is or who's involved. So why would you say they should care? Why should they take further action?
Well, think about this in a place that people who have very little chance ever to have felt the compassion of Christ or hear the gospel, and in regular areas of their country, they would have very little chance or hope to ever hear. They're in now a place that they can receive compassion and hear the truth of the gospel for the first time in their life. And the other side is, we're talking about women, and we're talking about children, and we're talking about a ministry to the least of these. And I would say that all you'd have to do is, why should we be concerned? Is because Christ commands us to love those who are lost, and especially to those who are the last groups who have not heard, and then to the least of these. So I'd say it's pretty clear cut that we should be concerned and joyful over an opportunity like this, and in so many other places, to have small windows of access to folks who have never felt the love of Christ and never heard the gospel.
Well, I agree, and that's why I'm excited to share this story with our listeners. For now, that wraps up all my questions. Was there anything I missed or anything else you'd like to add?
No, very good. Good. Are you guys doing okay at Mission Network News?
We're doing okay. We're, as far as the